Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now it's time for Anthony Herron on 104.3 The Score.
Shot. Center. Better part of the next 2 hours. I am your voice. This is Anthony Herron on Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Any guests will, of course, join us on the Score Hotline. And my guy, Tyler Farrengold, a.k.a. Baby T, is a fantastic guest for us. I'll get to in just one moment. Any breaking news on the Score, sponsored by iDot. At some point in the day, everyone is a pedestrian. Slow down. Give them space. Share the road. It's not a game. I will get to some press conference sound here later in the show as well. Press conferences on the Score presented by Hyundai and your local Hyundai dealers. I mentioned we will have an exceptional guest that Tyler has booked. That is Pat Finley, my guy on the Bears beat. He'll be with us in just a few short minutes talking about the latest from Halas Hall. And I was at Halas Hall for a few days last week covering the Bears for NFL Radio. So looking forward to getting into some of that throughout the show tonight as well. Before I get to some Bears thoughts, especially and specifically the Darnell Wright contract, and Darnell Wright addressed the media today. So we'll let you hear from the big fella in a few minutes here. I'm confident many of you have been driving around or you're getting off the clock, and this may be your first opportunity to hear the first time that Darnell Wright, now that he's gotten that bag, gotten that second contract, that he's had the chance to address the assembled media. So we'll let you hear from the Bears' right tackle. And at this point, the best right tackle in the NFC North, highest paid right tackle in NFL history. We'll let you hear from Darnell in a moment here. But man, Cubs swept the Dodgers. The Chicago Cubs have swept the Los Angeles Dodgers. And, they upped their home record to 10 games over 500. And as great as it is that the Cubs are playing like this, and as exciting as it is that you've got these new arms incoming and a bolstered roster on the north side preparing for the postseason and for who knows, perhaps a deep postseason run, perhaps the most exciting thing coming out of that is that you've got the reigning NL MVP with the possible, the potential, nay, the presumptive NL MVP at this point in PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong. One of these guys, I'll put it this way. The 2026 NL MVP went 3-for-5 with 2 home runs today. Now, I don't know whether it's going to be Shohei. I don't know if it's going to be PCA. But both those guys put on a show. 3-for-5 with 2 bombs, just answering one after the other. And there was a point where PCA's flair for the dramatic seemed like that was going to be enough. And now we're at a point where, especially with Shohei not having that additional element of taking the mound as one of the dominant power pitchers in the sport. So now it's just a conversation of which hitter is doing bigger things for their ball club. And there's a more than representative case to make that individual is Pete Crow Armstrong. Not only one of the biggest and best bats in the National League, perhaps the best center fielder in baseball, maybe the best defensive outfielder in baseball overall, but certainly this season, what PCA is doing, this MVP run, and it began in the month of June. And that part of it reminds me of back in 1998. Now, I was still a college student. I'm still at the University of Iowa at that point, early in my time as a Hawkeye. And that home run chase between McGuire and Sosa, we came into the season, everybody knew that Big Mac was going to try to make his push for the home run record. And then in the month of June, what Sammy did that year for the Cubs with a major league record, 20 home runs in the month of June. And, you know, the entire baseball world, you know, we've talked plenty in the years since then about how, you know, a lot about that home run chase saved baseball coming out of the strike. But what Sammy specifically did and eventually winning the NL MVP over McGuire that season, but the month of June and every time Sammy went to the plate, just being must-watch television. And so he, in a lot of ways, as being viewed as a guy who was a talented player, and of course the power just went through the roof for you know, enhanced reasons that have been discussed plenty since then. But it didn't, especially at that time, didn't dissipate how much fun it was to watch that. Now, this June, there had already been plenty of conversation about Pete Crow Armstrong. He'd already gotten the extension from the Cubs. And so the question was, can he be that guy from the first half of the 2025 season? Is that him, or is this helter-skelter version him? And what we've seen from the month of June on as really the best player in baseball, and I'm going to get into this more in the second hour with you tonight as well as we take you up to Chicago Sky basketball on the score, but some comparisons with Bears quarterback Caleb Williams that really stand out to me as well that I think you're going to want to hear. But right now, the Cubs have the guy who should win MVP in the National League, and that scrutiny will only ratchet up more and more as we get through August and September. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, and if Shohei isn't on the mound, there's no reason that PCA shouldn't end up winning MVP. And right now, from my understanding, he's, you know, the odds makers have him leading or at least tied for the most part with Shohei Ohtani. Shohei's been there and done that. At some point, I think, you know, perhaps voter fatigue sets in, if nothing else, and just enhances that plausibility, that likelihood that Pete Crow Armstrong wins the MVP. And it'll be deservedly so from the performance he's putting on. Two home runs in the game today with Shohei just right there staring right back at him. I got to see Shohei in person about a month or so ago when my family and I were on a trip out west. And he wasn't on the mound that night, but just watching him, just big guy, long lefty swing, and just when the ball makes contact with his bat, the sound, the sort of rocket type of sound, just the explosion that's there when Shohei Ohtani makes contact with a baseball is like I've rarely heard in person from many hitters. So he puts on a show regardless of whether he's on the mound or not. It's just fun to watch him in the box, the confidence and comfort that's there. But Pete Crow Armstrong, he's right there just from the production that we're seeing on a consistent basis from him and what he's doing as a hitter. Like I mentioned, I'm going to come back to some of that at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. And I'll call it the parallel that seems to be there between the rapid ascension of PCA and the rapid ascension in a very specific way that I think is really remarkable from each of these individuals, Pete Crow Armstrong and Caleb Williams. I'm going to come back around to that at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. But specific to the Bears, now some unfortunate injury news. I got a chance to interview Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, Kobe Bryant. When I was there a few days ago, I was with Jeff Joniak for NFL Radio covering Bears training camp. And to have that chance to interact with them in person, I always love going up to Hallis, but normally I cover Colts training camp, as I'll do again this weekend for NFL Radio. But this is my first time to cover Bears training camp specifically for NFL Radio. And to see the ball club on the practice field, but then to get that opportunity interacting with them in tight space on the air and off, the confidence that's there, that's exuded, but it's met with an urgency as well. No one is satisfied by what took place last season. That's certainly my sense for the vibe there at Hallis Hall. And Kobe Bryant, I was really excited to watch him in a Bears uniform because I saw what he did, how he impacted that Seahawks defense. And now he's going to be out for a couple of months, but it should still be fairly early, certainly in the first third of the season, maybe even first quarter of the season, that he should be in a position to return to the lineup. So hopefully that ends up working out, because this is a Bears defense that'll benefit from his temperament, that'll benefit from the violence and the urgency that he plays the game and plays the position with. And conversely, on the Bears offense, an individual who has become one of those tempo setter types of players is Darnell Wright. And there's a lot of conversation about Darnell Wright when the Bears drafted him a handful of years ago, and the conversation about whether or not taking Jalen Carter was going to make more sense at the time. And in the end, Ryan Poles made the decision that Jalen Carter, the immaturity that showed up in multiple ways closing out his college career and in the pre-draft prep process, that the Bears weren't at a point in their development with the organization, within their locker room. They weren't at a point where taking a risk on Jalen Carter and whether or not they had the wherewithal, had the maturity in the locker room, had the infrastructure in place to contain, to nurture, to develop a player with the temperament and immaturities that showed up with Jalen Carter. And all that has been there in Philadelphia with the Eagles, but the Eagles have been a grown-up franchise for the entire time Jalen Carter's been there. They've had a head coach who apparently is skilled at dealing with volatile personalities, and a locker room with a lot of veterans in his meeting room, in his position group, where whether or not he's showing those immaturities, you got production that's around Jalen Carter in Philly. Regardless, that wasn't going to be the case in Chicago, certainly not early in his career. So the Bears end up going with Darnell Wright. And now the guy who, with Penei Sewell moving from right tackle to left tackle, you got the best right tackle in the division, one of the best right tackles in football. I wasn't certain yet whether or not Darnell Wright would get paid right now, because I was confident that he and his representatives would be looking to make him the most highly compensated right tackle in NFL history, because it's just kind of his time in the clock to become that. I wasn't sure if the Bears were there yet. I wasn't sure if Ryan Poles was there yet, if they would feel like that had been earned, that had been shown enough from Darnell Wright to make him that. Now, the way they seemed to go about the decision was, you know what? If we don't do it now and we try to do it a year from now, price of the brick is just going to keep going up. So we're going to go ahead and make this happen right now. That's the decision the Bears came to. And Darnell Wright had the opportunity to address the assembled media out at Hallis Hall today. And now that his deal has been reported, is out there in the public, his four-year, $116 million contract with $93 million of that guaranteed, well-earned from his performance on the field. And one of the things that Darnell Wright spoke about was, now that he's got this position coach in place, Dan Roshar, and what this has meant to him, he addressed how specifically has Dan Roshar helped him.
He's consistent every day in what he does and what he says. He's consistent in what he's telling you. He's honest, and he's not a, you know, some coaches I've had in the past, or some coaches in the league, you know, they're not very good teachers. You know, they see a guy with talent and blah, 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 but they can't really convey what it is and teach you. You know, you still need to be taught. So I think he's such a good teacher, and he does it with such good. He's not yelling at you. He's not screaming at you. He's not demeaning you. You know, he's telling you what's good and what's good about the rep. He's telling you what's bad about the rep. So you can see both sides, you know, instead of, you know, maybe if you have a coach that tells you just, you know, what you did wrong with the rep. So maybe the next rep, you just change everything. And then now you have a different result. You have no consistency to stack on top of each other. Whereas I think Dan, he shows you what you did good with the rep so that you can, you know, keep doing the good things and then fix the bad things he tells you. So I think that's the biggest thing.
It's always such a fascinating relationship between student and teacher, between coach and player. How does that teacher go about reaching the student? How does that coach go about communicating with that player? How does the educator end up connecting with the pupil to try and get the best out of them? And sometimes it can just be where one person's got one gear and you better figure out how to respond to it or you don't. Charles Haley was my D-line coach with the Detroit Lions, and Charles was Charles Haley. He was a big, bombastic, and volatile personality. And I eventually had to just kind of figure out how to navigate Charles. And he's spoken a lot about his mental health travails that he's gone through as a player and as an adult in the years since then. But you know, not every coach, not every teacher, not every educator, and what style is most comfortable to them, reaches every student in the same way. And frankly, there's just some coaches who just aren't good at the job, even at the NFL level. You may be shocked to hear that. There are position coaches that just aren't good teachers. There are people who know the game who don't really communicate the game at a high level. Some unsuccessful teams. There's a lot of coaches in the NFL, a lot of position coaches in the NFL. A lot of them, I would say the vast majority of them, know what they're talking about, but it doesn't mean they communicate it well. And that can be a very tenuous sort of balance. And Darnell Wright went into discussing the rare qualities that Dan Roshar possesses as a teacher.
Well, it's just, my college coach, he was very good. Coach Ellerby, he taught me very good, and he kind of had that approach as well. I think that's why I learned a lot in college. And then Dan, he comes and he kind of has that same approach. He's teaching more. It's not I just don't jive well with a coach that's just, you know, you can yell to your lungs, you know, go out, but there has to be some substance in what you're saying, you know. So as long as there's substance, you can yell as much as you want, you know what I mean? Just, you know, have something, you know, to teach about.
I agree with that. A lot of people can get real loud and be real assertive in the way they're communicating. Are you saying things that make sense or not? Even if you haven't played the game, there's a whole lot of folks who didn't play the game at a high level who are really high-level position coaches in the NFL. There's some who played the game at a really high level but just can't teach it for whatever reason. But this combination of Dan Roshar, Darnell Wright, and certainly within Ben Johnson's offensive system, it has gotten the best out of Darnell Wright and helped nurture him into becoming one of the best offensive linemen in the sport. And he certainly got compensated with the reports there, with the guaranteed money especially. He's being compensated in kind with what his ability ended up showing as a top 10 pick. So congratulations to Darnell Wright, to Ryan Poles as well. Really happy that the Bears got to this point with a guy who they invested big-time draft capital in. We'll talk to Patrick Finley, not only about Darnell Wright, about how training camp has continued to progress and what the Bears are going to do with this Kobe Bryant situation, not having their star free agent acquisition from the offseason available for the next couple of months. What does that mean for the Bears defense? Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times will join me to talk about the Chicago Bears. He'll do so next on the
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi, I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
Good, good. It was just, everybody goes through it once you go through negotiations, blah, blah, blah. So good to, happy to know that I'll be here for a while. So
when you told us that last week, did you sense that this was close?
No, actually, I didn't know what it would be like. I was just more so leaning towards, obviously, fifth year option. I have another year on my contract. You could be franchise tag, you know, all that stuff. So obviously I knew I would be here for a long time. So.
The voice of Darnell Wright, Bears right tackle and highest paid right tackle in National Football League history. he essentially just yada, 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 $93 million guaranteed dollars. But that's just the vibe that Darnell Wright tends to strike. And you know what? I can respect that. I hope he did some one-handed cartwheels, though, because it was certainly worthwhile for a four-year, $116 million deal. I wasn't at Hallis Hall the last couple of days here, but my guy Patrick Finley was. He is the Bears and the NFL's beat reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. You can find him on social media at Patrick Finley. Mr. Finley, did you observe any one-handed cartwheels from Darnell Wright that looked like a man who had just gotten that bag?
I did not, but God bless you guys for clipping my question and using it with my voice and everything in the intro. Darnell Wright is very, very, very mellow off the field. On the field, I think the case is completely different. But, yeah, I didn't expect that he would come in and start jumping up and down. He downplayed it pretty well, but, my gosh, when you get that sort of money, that is generational wealth and a sign of respect in the league. And I would imagine that both of those things have to be pretty overwhelming for him right now.
So personally, and I don't know, I might have even talked to you about this a little bit late last week when I was up there with you guys at Hallis. I wasn't completely confident that, like, I was confident they're going to get something done with Darnell Wright at a certain point, but I was confident Darnell Wright and his representatives were going to look to make him the highest paid right tackle we've ever seen. I wasn't completely certain that just based off of kind of the one all-pro year that maybe the accolades and the perception had met that mark quite yet. So I didn't know if the Bears were going to go there quite yet, and they did. Do you think it makes sense?
Yeah, I do. I'd heard that they had met him pretty high in the market when they started talking to him. I also think, too, that when you consider that Penei Sewell, the best right tackle in the world, is technically a left tackle, as you and I sit here right now, that makes that conversation maybe a little bit different when you're talking about salary, but also when you're talking about just who the best right tackle in the world is. This is a really good thing for the Bears to do for a lot of reasons. Number one, this is the third guy in 15 years of the fifth-year option since the NFL put it in. This is the third guy the Bears have given a contract extension to who they drafted in the first round. That is unbelievable. The other two are Kyle Fuller and Kyle Long, and that is your list. Roquan Smith didn't sign an extension, as we all know. Leonard Floyd was just told to get to Stepan after his fourth year. Mitch Trubisky, we can go up and down the list. So this is a rare, giant victory for the Bears in the first round, and I think that's good news for them. And the other thing is this, and, you know, Lord knows we've had enough general managers come through here, but they all say the same thing. And what they say is they want to reward their own. There is something really good in terms of team building when you do that, because it shows everybody on your team that, you know, if you do the best you can, the team will make it worth your while. I think every GM on the planet would rather pay their own guy that they believe in than try to pay a guy that hits the free agent market that his previous team did not believe in, or at least didn't believe in, to give him the money that they're looking for. So, yeah, this is a very good thing for the Bears, even though I'm sure down the line it's probably not going to be the greatest thing for their cap sheet. But you know what? That's rich guy problems, and that's a good thing.
No doubt, man. I mean, when you got, you know, salary cap constraints, you're hoping that as the cap tightens and there's less space within it, that you are getting some tangible evidence of results from that. And the Bears coming off of a division title season, they're obviously hoping to be able to follow that up with another big season this year. Now, early in camp, the Bears offense seemed to really have the upper hand on the Bears defense. And you know, it sounds like that tide's been turning a little bit in recent days since I was up there. What's that sort of parry and thrust been looking like to you? Has the Bears defense kind of, you know, gotten an edge on the offense in recent days?
On Tuesday, the defense certainly had the edge, and part of that was the offense kept making mistakes. There was a two-minute drill at the end of practice that was supposed to simulate the last 2 minutes of the first half, and if you'll remember, the Bears were terrible at the end of the first half. As great as they were at the end of games, that did not translate to the end of the first half, and Ben Johnson talked before practice Tuesday about how excited he was to see exactly what they could do in that drill. And I think two of the first three plays of that drill were false starts by the Bears offense. that is self-inflicted, and that is what was holding them back. I think that to have the defense come on a little bit is good. It's good news. Usually, I think we're all used to watching the defense dominate this time of year, and sometimes we make excuses for the offense, but I think what you want to see is either side of the football pushing back as camp wears on here. Now, in terms of what happened today, boy, it was a glorified walkthrough without pads today. Even when they were running plays, it was about three-quarter speed. I watch football practice, I guess, for a living, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that too much was learned from a very quick walkthrough that they had today.
Well, one of the things that did generate a bit of buzz at today's walkthrough was TJ Edwards being back out there. And there's been, I suppose, some prognostication, maybe even some assumption about where TJ Edwards might fall into things, because we did see DeMarco Jackson get out there, and when he got the opportunity to start last season, perform well in the Dennis Allen defense. And now you got Devin Bush out there. And so you've got small, speedy linebackers, and there's this perception that maybe that's just what DA is looking for. Where do you see TJ Edwards fitting into this linebacker mix?
So I think he's one of the two linebackers that plays all the time alongside with Devin Bush. I think DeMarco Jackson is for your base set, and maybe they mix in some Jack Sanborn now and again. TJ is a really instinctive, really fun player to watch. And, you know, I don't think he's going to set any sort of land speed record like Devin Bush does, but I think having a tackling machine like him out there is really important. And I think you felt it when he left last year, when he had that really gross-looking leg injury in the postseason. I think you could feel when he wasn't around. So, you know, they're going to use him back in the same way they did with Kyle Manungai the other day. You know, you do some individual, and then maybe the next day you jump in the team for a little bit, then you go more and more. They're going to do that with TJ here, but there's no doubt in my mind that he is going to play 100% of their snaps in week one if he's healthy. I can't imagine why he wouldn't.
Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times, my guest here on Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. And to have TJ Edwards back in the mix, and we'll see, you know, how much, you know, if he gets any preseason action and just where he's at in his ramp up phase in the days to come. But getting starters back healthy is a great thing. We hope Kyler Gordon is headed in that direction as well. We know Kobe Bryant is not at the moment. How concerning should it be that the biggest free agent acquisition the Bears made won't be available for the next couple of months?
Pretty concerning. You know, we were trying to make a list of injuries that we've covered in camp. This is my 14th season, so I started when Trestman started. And, you know, I couldn't remember one that was, you know, more impactful, really, than this one. And, you know, it's for a couple of reasons. Number one, you gave this guy all this money. Number two, he has to learn Dennis Allen's system. And, you know, I know he's a veteran. And, you know, remember, he was a corner in the NFL for the first 2 years of his life. So this is really his third season ever at safety full time. And I think, you know, it takes a while to learn the system, and you want to be able to learn it and then be able to, you know, act it out in pads as opposed to the off-season program where they did it in shorts. So, you know, it's obviously going to hurt Kobe's comfort level, I think, not being out there. And, you know, the thing that really does bother me is, you know, the idea that Dylan Thienemann could come along with a Super Bowl champion, Kobe Bryant, in his hip pocket all throughout training camp, and then for the start of his rookie season, boy, like, that sounded like the best possible scenario to put him in. And it seemed like the fastest way to capitalize on using a first-round pick on a safety. You know, not a lot of people use first-round safety. And there's a reason for that, is unless you're at the very, very high end of the position, that's just kind of one of those spots you can fill with a fourth-round pick if you want to. You know, part of the Bears' argument was that Thienemann was versatile and that Thienemann could grow along with Kobe Bryant, and that's what made this a good weapon for them. With Kobe not there, Thienemann, I don't want to say he's on his own because there are other players there, but it's just going to be different. And, you know, I worry that he might not be as far along by the time we get to the middle of the season as he would have been if Kobe had been there taking every snap with him during training camp.
And just as a complete side note, but just something I haven't really gotten into on the air, Tyreek Stevenson, I am he's going to be the starting corner for the Bears, and he's played some high-level corner in his career. I just wonder if, because when you said this about Kobe Bryant, it kind of, you know, piqued my interest. Just in the back of my mind, I've had the notion that Tyrique Stevenson could at some point in his career develop into a safety, just as he shows he's really got all the mental aspect of the game down at that level. He's got a build that I think suits it and a temperament that I think suits it. But for now, he's going to be a starting corner for the Bears. That's a complete non sequitur. It really, I wanted to ask you about Jalen Johnson, just what you've seen from him. Well,
can I talk about Tyrique Stevenson real quick?
Yeah, please.
You're right, by the way. I mean, the thing that makes him good is he's a really willing tackler for a corner, without being insulting to cornerbacks. Especially for a corner, he's a very willing tackler. I talked to him one-on-one the other day, and I posted this story on the Sun-Times website around noonish today with him talking. And you know, we've heard the coaching staff say about him, boy, he needs to be more consistent. Boy, we need him to be steady out there. That's something that he hasn't been in his career, despite these really athletic flashes that he can show.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him about it, and he brought up the Hail Mary on his own. And I stopped him, and I said, hey, man, this isn't me bringing it up. This is you. He goes, I get it. But he said, you know, ever since the Hail Mary, you know, he has been well aware that one play can turn your career in a certain direction. You know, the way he phrased it is, you know, the whole league will forget about you with one play. And he knows stepping out on the field, even in practice, that, you know, that he needs to get each play right in order and not really think about the big picture, to the point where he's not really worried about the contract being up at the end of this season. He said, you know, if I thought about it too much, it'd probably give me anxiety, and I don't need that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he performs. He is taking all of the snaps opposite Jalen Johnson. As far as I'm concerned, this is not a competition between him and Terrell Smith or anybody else. So he's going to have every chance to play and show what he's worth. And I think teams are going to come right at him because you've got Jalen Johnson on the other side of the field. And even coming off that injury, I don't think he's going to see a lot of targets. Transitioning smoothly into Jalen. I think it'll be really interesting to see what he can do, because he still carries himself like a superstar. And, you know, we don't know how limited he will be by that injury last season. He says he's fine, but, you know, we'll see.
And that's the thing, like, you know, last season at this point in training camp, it's kind of like, all right, well, Tyrique Stevenson, you know, we'll see. It's a prove it year for Tyrique. That was going into 2025, but then Nashawn Wright was emerging. We hadn't seen him in a game yet, but we just knew the coaching staff must really love this Nashawn Wright guy, because he's already getting a lot of run. He's rotating in with the ones, and who knew? Who'd have thunk it? And then he, of course, emerged and had the season that he ended up having last year. With Jalen Johnson, as you look at it, he's already said to you guys, it's a contract year. For Tyrique Stevenson, it's a contract year. There's a lot of guys who it feels like contract years for, and they just saw Darnell Wright eat up a bunch of the salary cap here. When you look at that secondary and what Kyler Gordon, who's, you know, there's all these different forms of frustration, internal from him, external for a lot of us, just with the soft tissue issues there. Is this a Bears secondary that it feels like there's much of a chance for these guys who've been playing together for years now, for them to stay intact moving forward, when you think about even Jalen Johnson talking about it as a contract year?
Do you know, Dennis Allen, he's in his second season here. Do you know how many training camp practices he's had with all three of his starting cornerbacks healthy and participating?
Ooh, ever? I do not. How many?
The answer is zero. Not a single one. And it's because Jalen Johnson got hurt before the start of training camp last year, and then Kyler Gordon got banged up for a little bit, and, you know, now Kyler Gordon didn't start camp with them. So just getting the three of them on the field together, I think, would be a pretty major accomplishment here. We saw a little bit of that at the end of last season, but, you know, Tyrique was kind of quietly benched, or at least quietly turned into a rotation player at the very end of the season. Remember, he didn't play in week 18, and then I think he played about a third of the snaps in the playoffs. So they went with Nashawn Wright, not Tyrique, when it mattered most. And the reason that they let Nashawn leave is they thought that it was close in the competition, and that if they paid Nashawn what Nashawn was asking, that that salary would probably lock him into a starting job, even if Tyreek beat him out in training camp. So they didn't want to be in that position. And to me, that makes sense. In terms of the contract stress, we've seen Jalen handle it well. You know, I don't know whether you remember, but I think it was 2023. Remember on the eve of the trade deadline, Jalen requested a trade? You remember this?
Yeah, right.
It lasted 24 hours. And Poles said, if you can get me a first or second round pick, I'll trade you. And Poles couldn't get one, so we kept him. And all Jalen did was finish that season as Pro Football Focus's highest grade cornerback in the NFL. And then he got a big contract extension. I don't think the stress of a new contract is going to hurt Jalen. I think it will only help him. I don't know whether that applies to Tyreek and honestly to Kyler, because the Bears can walk away from Kyler with very little penalty at the end of this upcoming season. And boy, like Kyler would have to have a just superstar season, I think, for that to be anything but the Bears deciding to go in an opposite direction there.
A lot of talent on the back end who's missed a lot of action for various reasons. As always, man, love chopping it up, whether it's in person or here on The Score. Thanks for your time, Patrick.
Hey, anytime. Thank you.
That is Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times. And it occurred to me towards the end of the interview, went that whole way without asking about Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. I guess that's probably because I got a lot of Caleb on the way. You'll hear from Caleb himself. I had an opportunity to sit down with him a few days ago and do an interview with him for NFL radio. We'll get to some of that because I've been fascinated with the offseason and the on-ramp for Caleb heading into the 2026 season. We'll do that next on
the podcast. Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
And yeah, you talk about the stuff that we were harping on a year ago, how we want to break the huddle. We are elaborate in terms of the motions, the shifts. We feel like that's a great way to attack a defense. And so it takes a little while for a young quarterback to get the rhythm of getting all that down, the pre-snap procedure, as we called it. And now it looks completely different. It looks like it's his language at this point. And
Bears head coach Ben Johnson describing his offensive philosophy, the machinations associated with it, and his young quarterback, Caleb Williams. What's involved in Caleb having to dissect, diagnose, communicate, and execute this offensive system in the face of what the opposing defenses are throwing at him on a snap-by-snap basis? And a year ago, things looked much more disjointed early in training camp than they do right now. One of the things I got to talk to Kobe Bryant from the Bears defense, and also Grady Jarrett from the Bears defense a few days ago when I was up at Hallis for a few days with training camp, was that at that point early, you know, no pads or anything yet in those initial days, but Bears defense was starting slow. Bears offense had the upper hand. And part of that was because the operation was just looking so clean from the Bears offense. And while I was there, it was like I mentioned earlier, I got a chance to be there covering training camp for SiriusXM NFL radio, and the opportunity to talk to Caleb himself in that setting, for one thing, just to see him in person. You know, we've been talking on the station a good bit about just his appearance, the more slim trim version of Caleb. I think he was probably around 230 last season. I don't know exactly what he weighs now, but he said he lost somewhere between 10 to 15 pounds. And that's one thing that's strikingly different just about his appearance. But if you look back to last year, one of the things I asked Caleb about was the relationship between he and Ben Johnson, coach to player, and how Ben himself, as he got to know Caleb last year, how did Ben's play calling evolve to suit him?
What's awesome about Ben and why he's such a good play caller, other than, you know, he wants to be the best, he wants to be an innovator, he wants to come up with new things to attack defenses, is that he adjusts to his players. And so he adjusted to me, adjusted to the wide receivers, what they run best, what I throw best. And, you know, you go out there and you just rep those consistently, obviously in training camp and OTAs and all of that. You're trying to find what we do best. And so you're running everything. And then when you get to the season, the last week of or last week or two of training camp, you kind of figure out what we run best. And then he starts weaning out the things that we don't. And then we'll come back to it next year and try to run it, because obviously you want the whole playbook. You want to be able to run absolutely everything. But being able to do what we do best is something that he does well as a coach.
That's kind of more the tangible aspect of it. And one thing that, as I was there with Jeff Joniak, we asked him about as well, was the way that Ben Johnson goes about motivating not only the team as a whole, but specific to Caleb himself.
He knows I'm really competitive. And so he says things, and he'll say things in our meeting. He'll bring up stuff for me that people have said about me or anything like that. And he knows it gets me going. And obviously I want to, you know, when we're on the grass, he's not saying those things on the grass. It's more, he knows I want to be perfect. I want to be at my best. I want to be the best. And so, you know, when I mess up, he gets on me and it frustrates me. And being able to get frustrated and understand, you know, where to correct, but also I got to cool back down and get ready for the next play.
It's really intriguing just kind of watching a lot of this play out in real time from one coach to the next coach, season one to season two, but then also the trust that was obviously there between Caleb and Ben as that season moved on, and Caleb kind of recognizing, you know what, here's why he's got me doing certain things. Here's why he's saying certain things to me, figuring out how to push individual buttons that end up connecting with Caleb. Going back to that student teacher thing I was talking about earlier when we were discussing Darnell Wright. I was mentioning it to the midday show earlier with Raheemy Harris and Grody. Before I went to Bears camp, I was on with them talking about Caleb and the demonstrative version of Caleb we saw come out more and more later in the season last year, as he obviously had more of a grasp of the Ben Johnson offense. I asked Caleb specifically about that as well. Just, will we see more of that demonstrative version of Caleb as he really has ingested this system that much more?
That's the plan each year. Being able to come in and command more of the teammates, command more of myself first, being on time, being here early, getting the work in, showing up. First it starts with that, and then from there going out in the grass, and everything matters from grass. And then when you get to Sundays, you got to win ball games. And so, we're going to keep doing that. And so, with that, it's going to take more, and it's going to take more command from me. It's going to take more command to know everything from the teammates.
You're hearing and seeing a version of Caleb Williams that's certainly seeking excellence, seeking consistent greatness. And there's a lot of respect that's there for Caleb around the National Football League at this point. If you're looking at different lists that are coming out and tiers of quarterbacks that he's considered in, top 100 lists, all these other things. But in the end, you still got to put that work in to really showcase those skills on a consistent basis. And that consistency is what all great players end up achieving, but it's what separates the great players from the guys who just kind of are getting by from one season to the next in the league. We're seeing not only Caleb with the Bears, but Pete Crow Armstrong with the Cubs finding new lanes of achievement that during their rookie seasons, it seemed like weren't going to be available for them to access, just because we rarely see guys able to correct these particular bugaboos that each of them have found ways to correct. After a timeout, we'll come back, and I'm going to tell you that the parallel that I'm seeing between these two great young Chicago athletes and what's so striking about the way that they found ways to continue to tweak their game. We'll do that next. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Score Evenings on 104.3 The Score.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.